let's do this. Get set.
This is Running Flat Radio with Chris Uzinski on AM 800 CKLW, the information station. Running Flat Radio is a paid program on AM 800.
That day, for no particular reason, I decided to go for a little run. So I ran to the end of the road.
And I went for a run.
When I got there.
And I did. Welcome to Running Flat Radio. Chris Uzinski here. If you're unfamiliar with Running Flat Radio, it is it's a radio show all about running. We're live here on AM 800 CKLW on Tuesday nights. Broadcast throughout the Great Lakes, and you can also hear us on podcast by Wednesday afternoon on iTunes or right on the runningflat.com webpage. Right at the very top, there's Running Flat Radio. You can just stream it right off the site. We had an amazing show last week with a gold medal winner, Melissa Bishop, who is our kind of unofficial guest host. And she did a wonderful job last week, and we do wish her all the best in the world's coming up at the end of this month. And, Running Flat also produces a number of running events in the local area. We have a race that's coming up pretty shortly, as a matter of fact, this Saturday night. It's the Walkerville Brewery Craft Draft 5K, and that race is very unique for a lot of reasons. One is, fundamentally, it's a beer run, and you can just say, look, it's a beer run. It's not a very serious event by any means. It takes place in the historic district of Walkerville and leaves the Walkerville Brewery, and it actually kind of goes across Riverside Drive and then uses the rest of the gorgeous Detroit River Vista here in the city of Windsor as the course, and then it comes back into the finish line, and then from the finish line into this big party area that's being hosted by the sister station of CKLW, 89X, is hosting a dance party and an after party for us. And, of course, there's beer involved. And one of the other things that we kind of added as the, kind of neatness or the kind of shtick to this race, as sometimes we call it, is when you do register for the race, you have to declare your marital status. So there's, if you're single and available and looking for a mate, your bib is bright green. If you are in a committed relationship of some sort or married, then you have a red bib that says taken. And then we have this other kind of category with a yellow bib that says it's complicated. And believe it or not, there's a really decent percentage of yellow bibs that have registered to date. And I can't wait to see what happens at this event. I think we're going to see a huge upsurge in our kids events in the next 10 or 12 months. But, because there's quite a number of singles. There's a lot of marrieds, too. I think there's twice the amount of marrieds as there are singles. So I think everyone's just coming out to have a great time. Traditionally, in most of our races, we have a kids' dash. I think we're just going to throw caution into the wind and maybe do a singles dash down Argyle Avenue just for fun. But anyway, it's the Walkerville Brewery Craft Draft. It's going to be a lot of fun. I can guarantee you that. Our good friend Dave-O is hosting the event, as always, calling the race. And the event is a 4 o'clock in the afternoon is when race kit pickup starts. 6 p.m. is the actual race time. And from 6 till about 7 o'clock is really the race and the course. And then 7 till 10 is really the after party right there on site. And for more information about that, go to runningflat.com. It has all the info there under the Craft Draft logo. Registration for that closes tomorrow at 6 o'clock online, and then everything is done in person at Walkerville Breweries on Saturday starting at 4 o'clock. The race that we do after that is really the race that we started the entire organization with, and that was the Run for Heroes Marathon, which originally started as the World Alzheimer's Day Run for Heroes Marathon. It benefits the Alzheimer's Society of Windsor-Essex County. I think to date we've probably raised about $175,000 for local caregiver support programs over the years. And it's a very interesting race because it takes place in Amherstburg, Ontario, an incredibly gorgeous course. And it's a half marathon, a 10K, a 5K, a kids 1K, kids half K, plus a kids marathon. The half marathon, honestly, is one of the most beautiful half marathons you can do. It's super flat. It's very fast. It goes through wetlands. It goes through a little bit of agricultural area. And then it's all this beautiful Detroit River vista that kind of goes all the way from, if you're familiar with the geography, Ducks on the Roof on Lake Erie and down all the way through historic town of Amherstburg in through Fort Malden, the battle fort under Parks Canada, War of 1812 kind of epicenter. It's an awesome place to run through. And then kind of comes back to this brand new arena complex where we have the finish line. It's a fabulous half. The 10K does a similar course, and the 5K just stays around the arena, obviously. For information about that event and all of the kind of sub-events that go along with it, runningflat.com. This is the ninth year for that event in its various iterations. I mean, it started as an ultra marathon. It started, you know, as a 69 kilometer run, then an 88 kilometer run, then a 100, then a 100. And then we kind of converted it to a marathon, Canada's most southern Boston qualifier, and really our region's only Boston qualifying marathon this side of Kitchener-Waterloo or Hamilton. And then we ended up last year, because of excessive costs in trying to manage a course that size, we had to discontinue the marathon. But we've continued the half marathon, the 10K, the 5K, the kids' events. So you still get a really awesome shirt. You get a great medal that kind of celebrates the War of 1812, American and Canadian cooperation for the last 200 years. And you also get to support your local race as your only half marathon in the fall. And after that, we have one left in our season this year, and it's, of course, the Zombie Chase, which has become like a big family tradition. Zombie Chase, interestingly enough, was never kind of designed that way. It was designed to be a really kind of fun singles event, and, you know, really kind of take advantage of the folks who love to dress up as zombies. And it became this massive family event, especially because it's Thanksgiving Saturday night. I guess people want to eat turkey and then go do something like really fun and crazy. So they all dress up as zombies and kind of join us for a Zombie Chase along the waterfront, which is incredibly picturesque because the start finish line is under the shadows of the Ambassador Bridge, and you kind of run towards the center of town and back, and you know, I don't know, you get like 500-600 people out to that event. It's not a huge event, but it's a super really cool family event because it starts just at dusk, you know, because that's when all the magic really happens with zombies. And you know, and then by the time you're coming back, it's pitch black, and it's just a lot of fun. Really cool metal, really cool shirt. Metal glows in the dark, of course. And again, for information about Zombie Chase, Run for Heroes, and of course, Craft Draft this weekend, you can go to runningflat.com. And we've got a really exciting show for you today. We have my dear old friend, Dr. Tim O'Callaghan. He's going to be in studio, and we're going to be talking about an issue that really troubles me greatly as a race director, and Tim can even tell you how I obsess about this, and that's the issue of overheating, heat stroke, hydration, dealing with all these issues so all of our runners are safe and they all come home to their loved ones. You know, they start with us, and we want to make sure we put them in the hands of their loved ones healthier than we found them. Starting the race. So, you know, we're going to talk about that. And then we're going to talk about this really interesting bike race that he's doing that's called Paris-Brest-Paris, which is this, you know, I'll tell you, it's just a crazy 1,200-kilometer race that goes, you know, around, goes, you know, across France and back. And we're going to talk about that because there's a really interesting qualifying system to that. And then the race itself is pretty amazing. So, our good friend Ben Kaplan from iRun Magazine, the editor-in-chief, is going to join us near the end of the hour to kind of talk about some interesting news in the running world. You are listening to Running Flat Radio on AM 800 CKLW.
I'm not the kind that needs to tell. Something festive is transforming downtown Windsor. It's Fiesta Latina,
a Latin American cultural celebration, August 14th to the 16th in downtown Windsor, presented by the Downtown Windsor Business Improvement Association.
Latino DJs, Zumba, and salsa dance instruction, children's workshops and activities, bouncy castles, sidewalk cafes.
Plus, Le Baile Mexican de Montreal, Eliana Cuevas, Tatiana de Voce, and Latin Powered Band.
Sponsored by Mi Casita Restaurant, Motor City Community Credit Union, Tourism Windsor, Essex, Pelee Island, and AM 800. Visit FiestaLatinaWindsor.ca.
Now the forecast from the AM 800 Weather Center. Tonight, mainly cloudy, a 30% chance of showers early this evening, and a risk of a thunderstorm, then clearing, a low of 14. Tomorrow, mainly sunny, a high of 26. Wednesday night, clear, a low of 14. Once again, mainly cloudy tonight, 30% chance of showers early this evening, and a risk of a thunderstorm, then clearing, a low of 14.
At Cogeco, we had fiber back when gas cost 50 cents. In fact, Cogeco created one of the first fiber optic networks in Canada, and we haven't stopped improving on the technology since. Our fiber optic network has been serving Ontario for years. In fact, for 25 years. So if you've heard something different from our competitors, well, that's just not true. Get the facts about our state-of-the-art fiber optic network at cogeco.ca/fiberoptic.
Acronyms are designed to help us out, like YOLO, LOL, BRB. Well, there's a new acronym to help workers in Ontario. It's ORPP. It stands for Ontario Retirement Pension Plan, and it's here to help working Ontarians save for retirement and get a predictable annual retirement income. OMG, right? You'll be hearing more about the ORPP soon. In the meantime, visit ontario.ca/ORPP for more information. TTYL, paid for by the Government of Ontario.
AM 800 CKLW.
Oh, you're wonderful. I listen to you religiously.
The place to talk in Windsor, Essex.
I love you.
Running Flat Radio on AM 800. Get more info on local races and registration at runningflat.com.
And I'm Chris Yuzinski. Welcome to Running Flat Radio. And tonight my guest is a dear old friend of mine, Dr. Tim O'Callaghan. He is a family physician here in the Essex County area since 1991. He's the lead physician at the Amherstburg Family Health Team. He's also you're still currently the president of
yes.
Of the Essex County Medical Society. You're a crazy long distance cyclist. You admit to knowing me in public, which is probably detrimental to your career. And you know, it's great to have you. Welcome.
Thanks for having me back.
Yeah. And Tim's also one of our Raceline doctors who helps us out. So, you know, one of the things that as a race director I completely obsess about is hydration, and that's why a number of years ago we were the only company anywhere at that time. I think maybe there's one or two guys in Southern United States who are doing aid stations every 2K with a Port-a-John, and there's a lot of reasons for it. One is that I love the it's almost like a cadence as you're running, that you're not having to look for the Port-a-John or the aid station. Oh, it's coming up. I see it. Oh, yeah. No, it's every single 2K. So that way you can just enjoy the run. And then in your cadence, you'll know that, oh, another 2K, there's the aid station. There's some Infinite. There's some water. There's the Port-a-John, you know, with hand sanitizer every time in the Port-a-John. You know, like these little details that are really important. So we talk about our hydration plans when I meet with other race directors, and the difficulty of there's an alchemy of formulas that really we try to use, but the reality is you just have to keep overbuy. You overbuy your water, you overbuy your Infinite, and you make sure that every single person on that course is able to at least get two drinks at every aid station is really the calculation I use when I develop those courses. So there's a lot of waste. On purpose, because you never, ever, 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 ever want to be short of water on a course or liquids on a course. And it's just something that frankly I obsess about. And it's something that I think every race director, when you're talking about the safety of thousands of people that we put in our hands every year, we have to obsess about. So you and I have had a number of issues on a number of different courses with overheating. And I'm okay to admit that, because those were very, very hot days on very hot courses. And there really wasn't much more that we could have done to actually make it cooler. And there's lots of factors in that. One mostly being that the winter was so damn cold, everybody trained in the cold. And then when May hit, it was 40 plus.
Yeah, I'm thinking of the Pelee Island half marathon that we did last year.
That's fine.
And that was the one.
We can name it. Pull the scab back. No, it's okay. Everyone was fine, you know, but at the very end of the race, we were seeing symptoms of heat and exhaustion. They're pretty prevalent in a number of folks, right? So let's talk about those symptoms, and let's talk about how we can prevent those issues from happening, and how do we accelerate the recovery of those people when we do see those symptoms?
Yeah, so I guess let's talk a little bit about prevention first, and you know, the there's a couple of areas when we're talking about runners. First is the training. And so I think the big issue last year with the Pelee half was just the idea that it was a really cold winter. And as you say, everyone was training in cooler environment, wasn't really ready for the heat shock. All of a sudden got excited. They're out on a half. They're sort of thinking, well, a half's not as big as a marathon. I can push myself pretty hard here.
Yeah.
And those are the factors that go into heat-related illness. So we're looking at the level of physical activity. We're looking at the acclimatization that's already happened to heat. And in that year, there was really very little acclimatization, I think, that had happened for most of the runners. The level of physical output that they're putting, and let's face it, you get into a race situation, you're going to push yourself harder in a situation like that than you may in a training session.
Correct.
And then you're looking at the body's ability to dissipate heat. And so that really involves sweating effectively, but having your sweat evaporate, right? So if you're in a really hot, humid environment, you're sweating, but the sweat's not evaporating quickly, and you're not actually losing heat. So you're not dissipating the heat. And that's really the issue with heat-related illness, is that the core body temperature starts going up. And as it goes up, you start having symptoms. And those symptoms can be something just minor at first, which includes the excess sweating. But it can eventually lead to other symptoms like dizziness, lack of muscle power, a gradual tailing off in power, to the point where you become uncoordinated and you start to have some central nervous effects where you start to get dizzy. And as you know, in worst case scenarios here, you can run into problems with full-out coma or even death.
Right. So let me ask you, if you're feeling any of those symptoms, it's already too late. You already have it, right? So really, when you're talking about running in heat and we talk about a hydration plan for yourself, everybody's different. Like Eddie Whitlock drinks 2 sips of water in the middle of a marathon and then just keeps running, you know, and he's in his mid-80s. And meanwhile, you know, if I was to go to a half, I mean, I would go through probably 4 bottles of water and a couple of bottles of Infinite, and that's how I would train. And each person's so different in the way they approach hydration. I mean, what are your suggestions on that?
So I think hydration is part of it, but I don't think it's the overall picture. And so I think hydrating adequately, and you're going to know what's right for you based on your previous experience and your training. And I think last year with the Pelee half, one of the issues was people didn't have the experience that year.
Right.
They were running hard. They were pushing themselves hard in the cold and expecting that they were going to be able to have the same performance in a hot, humid environment.
There's another factor in the Pelee half as well. And that was, it's the most hungover start line you'll ever see of any race in the world. I mean, no doubt. I mean, there's a lot of people who've gone partying into the wee hours of the morning the night before that race to think, hey, we're going to go race in the morning and have some more fun.
Yeah.
So there's other factors involved in their hydration plans.
Yeah. And so the hydration plan, I think, starts well before you're on the course. And it talks about what's your hydration been like in the days leading up.
Right.
So that's where we're looking at alcohol and caffeine intake and trying to limit those things in the lead up to the race to maintain hydration coming to the start line, and then trying to maintain the hydration during the race. But again, it's not just hydration. I think hydration is very key here. And I think you're obsessed about that, Chris, because that's the factor that you can play into this.
Correct.
Your runners, you know, can choose to use those hydration stations or choose not to. But there's other things going on, and again, the level of physical activity, that just the power output that they're putting into their race is going to play into it as well. So your body's generating heat while you're running. You're sitting in a hot environment. You've got the humidity there that's not letting you dissipate the heat. If you're making heat more than your body can dissipate it, your body temperature is going to start to go up. And that's really the key thing behind heat-related illness. If you're not well hydrated, you're not going to sweat effectively. You're not going to dissipate the heat.
Right.
But if you can do all the right things with hydration and still run into problems.
Yeah, so let's talk about what some of the measures that we've kind of put in place. Obviously, we've got the stations every 2K. And then, after a long review of what happened last year at the hot races, we've decided to employ a new system this year. Because of this bizarre, strange weather patterns we had this spring, we never really had the chance to initiate it. But that was to able to give every single one of our participants when they cross the finish line a big jumbo Mr. Freezy.
Yep.
And as silly as that sounds to probably the average person out there that we're giving people Mr. Freezies, the idea is I can give you a bottle of water that's pretty cold, but by the time it's in your hot hands and you put it down your throat, I mean, it's cooling off immediately, or it's warming up immediately. But if I can get a Mr. Freezy into you fast, I can get that core temperature down a lot faster. Because that's the whole thing about recovery, right? When these conditions are in place, is we need to get that core down and, you know, and get hydration up.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd support that.
Okay, there you go.
That was easy.
And that's one of the systems that we're employing at Run for Heroes. And it's also, it looks like we may be doing it for our craft draft, even though it's a smaller race, a shorter race. Still, it's a 6 o'clock race on an August evening, and we're talking about, you know, some heat. So it's one of those systems that we're also going to employ at this race. And I think it's going to work. I mean, you know, at Pelee, we have some other options where we can put people in cold cellars and, you know, keep their feet up, and we try to do that. But any other quick ideas on how we can treat when we see those symptoms happening on the course for the average person who may be seeing it happen?
Yeah. So I think, you know, just again, getting back to that Pelee course, we had support on the course with vehicles on the course, which was nice, so that we could identify that people were having problems,
right,
and get to them, talk to them, make sure that they were coherent, you know, do a little bit of a medical assessment right on course. It seemed like all the stuff at that race happened in the last 2K or so.
Yep.
And most right around the finish line, but a little bit in the last 2K. So that's really where I think you as the race director need to continue to
focus
most of your attention.
Absolutely. And that's where we learn. You're listening to Running Flat Radio on AM800 CKLW. We'll be back right after these messages.
From the AM800 News Center, your number one news source in Windsor, Essex, an information update with Paul Pedro.
OPP officers in Leamington are trying to help a person get their sentimental items back. On Saturday, a resident reported losing a purple Coach wristlet somewhere in Leamington. The small purse contained personal ID, a white gold wedding band, a white gold engagement ring, and an anniversary ring set. 22-year-old Cody Trepanier of Lakeshore has been charged after allegedly trying to avoid a ride spot check. OPP officers were in front of their detachment Saturday morning when they noticed the vehicle turn off onto a side street to avoid the program. And a campaign to raise awareness and funds to help people cope with post-traumatic stress disorder is making a stop in Windsor today. Jeremy McNaught is walking across Canada next year to raise $100,000 to train 20 service dogs. AM 800 Sports, the Tigers are home against Kansas City tonight. Right now, the Big Cats trail 1-0, top of the second. Dave Dombrowski has been let go as Tigers GM, and the Jays hosting Minnesota tonight. Right now, the Bluebirds are up 1-0, bottom of the second. From the AM 800 Weather Center, clearing tonight, a low of 14. Mainly sunny tomorrow, a high of 26. Clear Wednesday night, another low of 14. Right now in Windsor, Essex, it is 25 Celsius. That is 77 Fahrenheit. I'm Paul Pedro, AM 800 News.
When you're able to focus your mind and your body, anything is possible.
From 5K runs to half marathons
to the full 26.2 miles.
We talk about it all on Running Flat Radio, Tuesdays, 7 till 8 on AM 800.
Welcome back to Running Flat Radio. Chris Uzinski here with Dr. Tim O'Callaghan. We've just kind of covered off heat stroke, which is kind of a timely topic. There's we see all kinds of other stuff on courses too, right? We see twisted ankles. We see a lot of conditioning issues as well, right? IT bands, maybe pulled muscles. I don't know what else do you see on the course?
Well, we had the one year where someone had their earbuds stuck inside their ear canal that we had to pull out. That was a little bit of fun at the finish line. But yeah, usually it's pretty minor stuff, right?
I forgot about that one. Oh, geez, I did. I totally forgot about that one. Yeah, and again, we also have from time to time some cardiac scares. And we have the folks from the Canadian Cardiac Center who come in once a year, and I love doing that show, and I think we're kind of due for that show as we come in towards Run for Heroes to kind of talk about heart health and really what you should be doing if you're thinking about getting off the couch, or if you want to join a run, or if you really want to get involved in a walk and then start increasing your endurance. What's the first thing that we should be doing?
First thing you should be doing is speaking with your primary care provider. That means your family doctor, nurse practitioner, sitting down and really, just letting them know what your plans are and making sure that there's not some medical issue that's getting in the way of you participating.
Right. So, I've run Detroit a number of times. One of the last times I ran Detroit, a young gentleman died in front of me running the half marathon. That was a horrible year for the folks in Detroit, and it was a moment that I never forgot. At that point in time, a race organizer, later race director, and it's something that still runs true to our heart. And that's the whole reason why I've even got my own. We've known our own defibrillators. Everyone of our core team is trained in CPR, and we've also continually tried to mitigate stuff with even the cardio phones that we use for Run for Heroes, right? Where we have a team of cardiologists at the finish line looking at, your EKG. So it's so important that these issues that we see in marathon and ultra running and longer distance running, where inevitably as a runner, look at runners, if you're listening to this, that someone at Christmas or at a holiday, some goofy relative is going to say, well, yeah, when they run, they die. People die all the time running. And you hear that because it's an ignorant comment that comes out of, the headlines that happen when something like that does happen at one of the marathons in the United States. It makes front page news and everybody talks about it for 15 seconds and it kind of sits in the back of someone's mind. The reality is 99.9% of the time, those are all undiagnosed heart conditions that could have been caught through examination and testing. And that's the issue, is that there's a lot of folks out there that have conditions and they're undiagnosed and they're out there running. And yeah, they probably ran their first marathon or second or half or whatever, but it's going to catch up to them.
Yeah, correct.
And it's important that they get to see a medical professional, which sometimes can be difficult depending on where you're at, but it's critical.
Yeah. So, again, that assessment by the primary care provider in that setting is going to really focus initially just on a basic history, focusing on cardiac symptoms, making sure there's no problems with chest pain. And very often people who have heart problems won't say they're having pain. They'll describe it as something else, but they'll point in the vicinity of their chest and say that they've got something going on there, and that happens exertionally. That's really the key for us when we're hearing about exertional symptoms that are coming on with activity. That's a tip-off that there may be a cardiac issue going on. So men more typically present, typically, as compared to female patients. Sometimes female patients don't have a lot of problems with chest pain, but they may present with arm pain or jaw pain, or just undue shortness of breath associated with physical activity. So if there's symptoms like that going on their what we call functional inquiry, even if there aren't any findings on their physical examination, we'll consider doing some further testing in that patient to exclude significant cardiac disease to give them the okay to embark on a running program.
Yeah. A little known fact that the average person wouldn't know, but you know, when you look at the aggregate data of all the deaths in running in the United States, 90% have happened within the last 600 meters of the finish line. And there's a really good reason for that. One is you see the finish line, so you start sprinting. And the other one is, you know, and it's all in anticipation of finishing, and it's the race announcer saying, you know, give it your all, give it your all. And meanwhile, you've been running for whatever period of time at, I don't know, 90%, and then you drive it to 110% of your heart rate, and then issues happen. And so, again, even with the way we've designed races, we don't tell people to sprint it out. We don't tell people to you know, hurry up and you know, get in there, you know, you know, get your PB, because that's the wrong thing to do. It's a paradigm shift that we need to switch in racing, because that's when those things are occurring. So I don't know. I don't want to beat a dead horse, but those are issues that you always got to be cognizant of, especially when you're planning a race or any kind of event like that. So anyway, look, one of the reasons I really wanted to talk to you was about this crazy bike race you're doing. And tell the listeners about Paris-Brest-Paris.
So Paris-Brest-Paris is a big bike ride. It used to be a race. It's more of an event now. So there's not sort of a first, second, third place in something like this. The results are all given alphabetically rather than by time. You can figure out who the fastest rider was if you wanted to try, and most people do. But anyways, it's got a long history. It actually predates the Tour de France. So okay. It started in the late 1800s, and it's been going on ever since then. It's run by an international group out of Paris called the Audax Club Parisienne. And basically, they accredit rides all across the world, in many countries across the world, as preludes to qualifying for Paris-Brest-Paris. Paris-Brest-Paris itself is an extremely long bike ride that starts in Paris, heads due west towards the coast, where Brest is, and then loops back. So it's just over 600K one way, 1200K round trip, and you've got to finish the course in under 90 hours. So you don't have to be moving at sort of full race speed the whole time, but that 90 hours includes everything. So your rest stops, your eating, and if you've got time to stop and sleep mixed in there as well, that's all included. So it ends up being a pretty challenging thing. I'm talking about it like I know about it, but I haven't done it yet. So it's an unknown quantity for me. And we'll see.
So what's your strategy?
Well, so the strategy in terms of the,
Go ahead.
Sorry, the strategy in terms of the ride itself is going to be, it's a evening start. We start at 6:45 on August 16th, which is a Sunday, and ride through the night. And then going to ride through most of the next day. So my strategy is hopefully to do about 24 or 25 hours on the bike pretty solidly for the first day. Get off the bike, sleep for a little bit, get back on. So at that point, I'll be much into the ride, maybe 480 or 500K into the ride. I'll ride out to Brest and back, at which point I'll stop at the same place and get another little rest. And then day three is going to be a big day for me. So I'm going to try to do most of the way back to Paris that day. Maybe get a little sleep in a ditch somewhere overnight. And
glamping.
Exactly. And then try to get back to Paris before the cutoff time, which is a little bit after noon on the Thursday.
So how many participants are we talking about here?
6,000.
6,000?
Yeah, so quite a big ride from, again, with participants from around the world.
And a night ride.
Yeah, so it starts off at night. So it's you have to stay ahead of the sort of minimum speed. So there are checkpoints all the way along the way. So it's not just that you have to be back in 90 hours, but you have to maintain a minimum speed all the way throughout the ride. And so you've got to make it to your checkpoint by a designated time, your next checkpoint by another designated time. So basically for the first 12 hours, you got to keep more or less riding, stopping to get hydrated and back on the bike and keep going. After you've been on the bike for long enough, you can be far enough ahead of that minimum time that you can stop and rest for a little while. That's why my strategy is to ride most of, so that first night, and I think all of the rest of the next day until starts to get dark out, and that'll be a good time. I should be far enough ahead of schedule at that point that I can get some sleep.
And how did you qualify?
Yeah, so interesting. You need to do a bunch of qualifying events, again, sanctioned events. As a minimum, you have to do a 200, a 300, a 400, and a 600-kilometer ride. I did all of those qualifying rides with the Huron chapter of Randonneurs Ontario, up around Port Elgin and Goderich. So some pretty hilly country, a lot of stuff through the Collingwood area, et cetera. And exciting, challenging rides with a whole lot of climbing and a whole lot of weather, actually, with most of those rides, too.
And is there a lot of climbing in the Paris course?
Less so than on the qualifiers. So the nice thing that the folks who have done PBP, as they call it, from around here have said that anyone who's done the Huron qualifiers has always succeeded at PBP. So I hope I'm not going to be the exception to that rule.
Wow. And why? Why do Paris?
You know, it's a cycling icon. It's definitely something that I've thought about for a couple of years now. And, I really enjoy the long distance stuff. So as much as I enjoy riding fast, short stuff as well, I really do enjoy doing the long distance stuff. It's a real challenge. There's a lot of camaraderie out on the road with the other riders as well. And it's a great time.
And just to talk about cycling for a bit, because we did have a couple of shows about Tri last month, which I thought were really enlightening. And I do want to spend a good two or three shows on Tri. I'm trying to put it together where we have a representative for the Ministry of Transportation. We have police chief or deputy police chief in as well, and we also have a couple of the riding groups in, and we have a round table, because being an endurance cyclist, you automatically break the laws of according to the Ministry of Ontario laws, right? I mean, most cyclists do not stop at stops, you know. I mean, with all due respect, the truth is the truth, and you know, the ministry has put forth some new laws to help with cyclists and cyclist safety, right? 3-foot rule, 1-meter rule, which I think is extremely beneficial and gonna be really helpful. It's still gonna have a lot of pissed off drivers behind you, but I mean, it's just something that I think they're just gonna get used to having to do as more fines are put out that they're not doing that. And you know, there was a recent death in the London area of a cyclist this last weekend, which is tragic. And it's something that I think we need to continually talk about, because I mean, even as a runner, I mean, I've been hit twice by cars, but you know, kind of bounced back. You know, you kind of bounce off them. You know, you've had a couple incidences as well as a cyclist, because you do a lot of miles a week.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
I guess I'm not looking at it on a weekly basis, but usually 15, 20,000 K a year.
Yeah. So you do what most people drive in a year, on your bike, recreationally, right? Training. You know, at a decent speed. So I mean, you're out there, you see it all the time, all the close calls and everything else. So I think that's it's an interesting conversation to have as a future show.
Yeah, I think that would be a great show.
Yeah, because I think people just kind of gloss over it. You guys keep doing what you're doing. Some police services like to fine you, some don't like to fine you. You know, I mean, I hear all the stories kind of coming up through the woodwork and through Facebook. I think it's one of those things that you have to open up and you have to peel back the wound, and we have to talk about it and try to find a way where you guys can be safer on the road. You guys can still train for your endurance sports, whether it's Ironman or half Ironman or Paris. and still be able to, you know, keep those solid rides in without all the stops and do stuff like that. I don't know what the answer is, but I think it's an interesting conversation to have.
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of a critical mass effect going on though as well. I think as more people get out on the road on bikes, I'm seeing improvements in the way that we're being handled by motorists. So there's still going to be the occasional Yahoo out there who thinks that they in their car should be the only thing on the road and that bikes shouldn't be there. But I'm seeing less and less of that as time goes on. So I'm hopeful that the critical mass is having a good effect on motorists' opinions. And it goes both ways, though. It's unquestionable that as cyclists, we've got to be respectful of the motorists that are out there as well. Mm-hmm. Conduct ourselves appropriately so that we get respect back from them.
Totally agree. Absolutely. Thanks for joining us, Tim.
Thanks so much, Chris.
Dr. Tim O'Callaghan here on Running Flat Radio. We'll be right back after these messages. Holy Holies. And for Song of the Week, I keep forgetting this, it's Holy Holy with Sentimental on Monday.
On a crowded train, the city goes as it takes away. Sentimental and lonely. Years, years, years collide, and the faces change in the photographs. This darkness is nothing but a lack of light. Darkest before the dawn.
I'm so irritated right now.
The Lynn Martin Show. I have a different take on this.
I was appalled. I couldn't believe it. I was so offended.
The place to talk in Windsor, Essex.
Is it possible to change our image? You know, what people outside of this area think about us? We'll talk about the latest description of Windsor and get your views on that. Plus, is it possible to smoke dope and be religious too?
The Lynn Martin Show. Weekdays 9 till noon on AM 800.
Keeping our environment clean is everyone's job, but you can go one step further and get paid for it. GFL Environmental, an industry-leading provider of commercial, industrial, and residential waste and recycling collection. GFL is now hiring for DZ residential driver loaders in the Windsor area. Previous waste experience is an asset, but not required, as training will be provided to all. For more details and to apply, visit GFLENV.com. GFL Environmental, dependable, responsible, environmentally focused. AM 800 Weather is brought to you by the City Grill, because it's all about good wine, good food, and a great time. The City Grill in downtown Windsor, a true city destination. Learn more at thecitygrillwindsor.com.
Now the forecast from the AM 800 Weather Center. Tonight, mainly cloudy, a 30% chance of showers early this evening, and a risk of a thunderstorm, then clearing, a low of 14. Tomorrow, mainly sunny, a high of 26. Wednesday night, clear, a low of 14. Once again, mainly cloudy tonight, 30% chance of showers early this evening, and a risk of a thunderstorm, then clearing, a low of 14.
I'm at the point where I'm so irritated right now.
The Lynn Martin Show. I have a different take on this.
I was appalled. I couldn't believe it. I was so offended.
The place to talk in Windsor, Essex.
Is it possible to change our image? You know, what people outside of this area think about us? We'll talk about the latest description of Windsor and get your views on that. Plus, is it possible to smoke dope and be religious too?
The Lynn Martin Show. Weekdays 9 till noon on AM 800.
Looking to start running? Strap on a pair of comfortable shoes. Now put one foot in front of the other and keep going. It's that easy. This is Running Flat Radio on AM 800.
And welcome back to Running Flat Radio. You know, I really screwed that one up. It is Holy Holy is the name of the group, and Sentimental and Monday is the name of the song. And the reason I brought that whole thing up was because sometimes when you're running, you just like a really mellow song that's got a fast tempo behind it. You know, like Dallas Green or something like that. Anyway, it's time for our dear friend from iRun Magazine, Ben Kaplan, to join us this week. How are you, Ben?
Good. Thanks for calling.
Hey, so what's going on in running this week?
Well, the big thing that I'm looking at and that everybody's looking at is the Sunday Times reporting about these 12,000 tests now from the World Championships, and 5,000 of the 12,000 tested positive for doping. So doping and running, and they're saying this is levels higher than what they saw in cycling. So
they
don't, you know, brace yourself for bad news sort of thing.
You mean they doped in cycling?
Right, yeah. I don't know. Maybe, perhaps. I don't know.
Yikes.
Yeah.
So I think what you're talking about is an IAAF requirement for testing to be in the World Championships. And this is not something from like just last year or the year before. This goes over almost a decade, does it not? Or is it a little more than a decade?
Yeah, that's right. They look between 2001 and 2012. And they found 146 Olympic and World Championship medals winners had suspicious tests. So, you know, you don't know. And they were saying many of the athletes were from Russia and Kenya. So it's disheartening, to say the least, because, you know, the Kenyan athletes and the Kenyan runners, there's this real mystique about it. And is it the atmosphere? Is it the jeans? Is it the running the school with no shoes?
Yeah.
And now you have to say, well, is it the doping?
You really hate putting stuff like that over the entire sport and then painting at least, you know, a whole nation like that either.
Yeah. No, so, I know. I'm a big propagator. I mean, that's the dream, you know. And you're Kenyan. I mean, you know, we all the Kenyan athletes have these great stories where, you know, there's a guy from a village and he wins the Boston Marathon and he comes back and he all of a sudden his village has roads.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and schools, and he's a hero. And
yeah, but I can see why, if you have the power through winning these races to pave your village. You know, and then there's this guy who's like, here, take this. It'll help you. You know, it'd be very hard to resist taking it. Very hard.
So, obviously, this was like a tease, right? I mean, there really weren't any names. There were a couple countries named.
Yeah.
There were some gross numbers. There weren't even any kind of defined drugs or abnormalities found. So what's next in that?
You know, it's a good question. I mean, they say that the World Champions begin later this month in Beijing, as you know, you know, that everybody's looking forward to. So I unfortunately, though, that's going to be the big story going into these events. So now that the fuse is lit, I mean, I know you can expect to hear a lot more of it. And, you know, and with the games beginning in Beijing, that's going to be the big story. And everybody, you can be sure that they are testing them now. And, heads will roll, unfortunately.
Has the IAAF come out at all to counter this or even comment on this?
Well, I think what they said is that, you know, that they put up the most rigorous testing and they're aware of serious allegations made against the integrity and competence of the program. But they're not yet, well, so they're looking into it and they're going to report when they have more of their information. But as of now, they don't know, but they stood by the work that they're doing. You know, which is what happens in these kind of things where it's a vigorous denial and, you know, they're taking it seriously, but they're trying to cover the tracks at the same time.
I think Dick Pound's going to get a new job.
Well, it's been this guy. It's just impossible to, you know, when there's people without very much and with everything to gain, you know, and there's ways to just shortcut to the finish line, you know, it's very difficult not to take it.
I guess. I don't know. I have a lot of mixed feelings. A number of years ago, we tried to get Lance Armstrong to the Run for Heroes marathon when he finally left cycling and went into running. And I have a lot of mixed feelings about the entire thing, right? I mean, You know, there's the school that everybody doped, and the guy's still one doping. You know, so it's kind of a level playing field. There's one way of looking at it that way. The other thing is, you know what, we should just throw the whole sport into the toilet, and start from scratch, and you know, make sure everybody's clean, and then we can kind of proceed. It's a really, really tough call. You know, I mean.
Yeah, it's these athletes. You know, they work so it's tough. Yeah, I hear you. It's a double-edged sword. You know,
it is.
If everybody's doing it, how should you not? But so where does it start? You know, how does it stop? What do you? I mean, it's like these horrible pushers. I mean, because the athletes, you can't say Lance Armstrong is not an extraordinary athlete.
Absolutely.
You can't say
right.
He doesn't put in the hours. I mean, you know, this guy is unbelievable. Or what he did for the sport and what he's done through Live Strong. I mean, he's.
Yeah, you can't take that away from him. You can't.
No, you can't take it away. But it's the scum. It's the scum that just is around these sports heroes, you know, and these guys. That's their job. They have they're pushers. They push poison, and then they're persuasive. And their poison is persuasive.
I hear you, man. I hear you, Ben. Thanks for joining us. Ben Kaplan is the editor-in-chief of iRun magazine, and you can catch them on newsstands and, of course, iRun.ca.
And I promise next week we're going to talk about something fun, and we're going to move away from this stuff, and we're going to talk about good times. All right.
Let's talk about the Canadian Death Race and the winner of that.
Let's do that.
Because that's amazing. Anyway,
totally.
Thanks, Ben. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, brother. Bye.
You've been speaking to that's Ben Kaplan from iRun, and this has been Running Flat Radio. Join us next week, and we might be talking a little bit more about the Canadian Death Race next week with the winner of that. Thanks to Dr. Tim O'Callaghan for joining us today. Don't forget that the craft draft, the Walkerville Brewery craft draft, is this Saturday, and keep running.
And that's the end of it.
End of episode. Running Flat Radio with Chris Yuzinski. Tuesday night, 7 till 8 on AM 800. Running Flat Radio is a paid program. Local news is next on AM 800 CKLW, the information station.